Everyone, it's December 2016, and thanks for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 26 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Jamar Tisby. Jamar is president and co-founder of the Reformed African American Network at randnetwork.org, where he blogs about theology, race, and culture. Jamar received a BA from the University of Notre Dame and is currently pursuing a doctorate in history from the University of Mississippi. In the upcoming volume 39, number 6 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Jamar has written an article for our Viewpoint column. Viewpoint addresses relevant contemporary issues in discernment and apologetics from a particular perspective that's not usually shared by all evangelicals. We hope that readers' thinking on Viewpoint issues will be stimulated and enhanced, whether or not readers end up agreeing with the author. Jamar's Viewpoint article is called Christians and Public Education, A Matter of Biblical Justice. Jamar, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is definitely an op-ed that falls into the category on which not everyone will agree, Christians. And, you know, when you talk about public school, what are some responses you've gotten from Christians when they learn about your public school background?
So I really was unprepared for this whole debate within evangelical circles about public education. It's kind of a third rail sort of topic. And when I kind of got into seminary and was around even more evangelical Christians, and I would tell them about my background in public education, I was surprised, honestly, at many of the negative responses. They would call it Caesar school, government schools. You're giving your child up to godless secular humanism. Those kinds of responses. I'm like, whoa! I was just teaching sixth graders. But I really hadn't come from a context where public education was this fraught topic along those kinds of lines. There are all kinds of other debates going on in education, but these theological ones within evangelicalism were, for me, a new experience.
So what are other objections that Christians would have to public school? And I think this is a really relevant topic. I mean, my background, I didn't go to Christian school, but I went to private school from kindergarten all the way through college, and I went to private university. So I know that people have specific, you know, ideas and opinions about and objections to public school.
Yeah, and let me just, you know, preface everything by saying that most of these concerns are very legitimate concerns. In advocating for justice in public education, it's not saying that there aren't real problems or real concerns. And so specifically these days, especially in the 2000s and the teens that we've had, the questions of sexuality are massively important. And so just recently, the Department of Justice and the Department of Education issued an advisory letter, so it doesn't have the force of law, but it clearly indicates the direction of the government. And the advisory letter was about transgenderism, specifically whether children in K-12 public schools could or should use the bathroom of the gender which they identify, and that doesn't always match their biological gender. And so that raises all kinds of questions if you're going to have, you know, kindergartners or third and fourth graders or eighth graders who are transgender students using the bathroom of the gender they identify with. And so Christians are very concerned, and even non-Christians are concerned about it. What does that mean? What does that look like? So from a Christian standpoint, there are many folks who take objection to what is being taught and what is being affirmed in public schools, particularly around the issues of sexuality, not just transgenderism, but homosexuality, marriage, those kinds of things. And they want their children to grow up with a traditional biblical view of those things, and they don't think they can get that in public schools.
So I know your article is called, public schools in terms of justice, in terms of biblical justice. Can you explain that for us a little bit?
Sure. So I joined Teach for America a year after college. And what that is, it's almost like the Peace Corps for teachers. It's a two-year commitment. They send you into underserved schools, usually high income, and you teach your heart out as much as you can. And there are lots of criticisms around that model. But for me, it introduced me to public education. And so I taught sixth grade in the Mississippi Delta. It was 98%, 99% black student body. Most of the students qualified for free and reduced lunch. And it was in a rural area which had its own set of issues, mostly around population and the fact that the county had been losing population for 30 years straight, basically. And so people weren't coming there, and there was a shortage of teachers. And at the same time, you have these beautiful children there who are eager to learn, excited about life, don't always have the material resources they need for an excellent education, don't always have the people resources they need. And so even with all of one's maybe ideological objections to the direction public education has gone or is going, when you think about the children who are actually involved, I think there's an imperative there. The Bible talks a lot about serving the poor. The Bible talks a lot about systems of justice and injustice. And all of that there's a nexus of all of that in public education and public schools. So I do think for Christians who are concerned about the kingdom coming and engaging in God's mission here right now, that public education needs to be a top priority.
I know at my local church here in Charlotte, North Carolina, we, along with some other area churches, are doing something that we're calling Get Off Your Donkey, in terms of the Good Samaritan who got off his donkey and helped. And so we're focusing on different areas of, social justice issues. And one of those is high school dropouts. And so our particular church and others like our church have gotten involved in some local elementary schools that are serving more low-income communities that you were talking about. And I know that you speak about high school dropouts. And so I want to find out from you why you think that there are these high dropout rates among public school students, and maybe particularly in more low-income areas.
This is a topic that people a lot smarter than me and who have way more experience than I do have long, long, long debates about. But basically, it boils down to a very complex and intricate web of factors, whether it's economics alone, and the way that we zone schools depends a lot on property value and the property taxes, so that in more affluent residential areas, they're going to have more resources for better schools, science labs, more highly qualified and trained teachers to pay those salaries, things of that issue. So you have this issue of residence and property tax and funding for schools. You also have more social issues. Again, factors that really aren't tied to any specific race. And I think it's a problem when we start associating these things with black people or Latino people. They're problems of resources, mainly. And so whether that's high incarceration rates that takes a parent out of the home and exposes children to all different risks despite the very valiant and noble efforts of single parents, or in general, how one is raised in a culture of literacy. Are there books around the house? Are you being exposed to bigger vocabulary? So all these factors add up, and it makes it very, very difficult for kids to make it all the way through high school, especially when you're in an environment where the education is maybe not as great as some other areas, and there's really no promise or guarantee that getting your education will deliver all that adults say it will in terms of kids being able to do anything or be anything they want to be.
So what would you say to Christians who would, you know, that just sounds like an overwhelming, huge challenge. Like, you know, you just feel overwhelmed. How can I help? Or why should I help? Or this doesn't really have anything to do with my particular experience. Like, I live in the suburbs. So why should I invest any time in being involved in this way? How would you answer that?
Yeah, the why should I invest any time, that's a very hard one. I mean, we pour, as parents, tons of energy into our own kids. How can we extend our concern to schools that maybe our children don't even attend? And that's why I think we need to think of this as Christians in terms of a matter of justice. So there are going to be factors out there, ills in the world that don't directly affect us, but that we are concerned about and do something about. You could even take an issue on which there's broad consensus among traditional Christians, like abortion. Well, not everybody is affected directly by abortion. I mean, it could come into your family, but there are plenty of Christians for whom it's not an immediate personal concern. Even if you're a man, it's going to affect you differently than if you're a woman. And yet, we find ways to advocate for justice around the unborn, around a pro-life stance. Can we do the same thing for education? And again, I bring it back to particularly a question of the poor. Most of the low-income schools are populated by minorities. These schools struggle in all kinds of ways. And so we really don't have a choice as Christians as to whether we should get involved. The trickier question is how do we get involved? And I think there's some rich conversation around that.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Jamar Tisby. And in the forthcoming 39 number 6 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Jamar has written our Viewpoint article called Christians and Public Education, a Matter of Biblical Justice. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50. And to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Jamar has also written a feature article on race for the journal called Putting Race in Biblical Perspective, which is available free online at equip.org. Well, you were talking about, you know, not a matter of should we, but how should we as Christians be involved in justice issues? But can you make it a little bit more personal for us? In other words, you know, you have experience teaching in public school. What are some examples or stories that you can give of some of these needs that affected children that you knew personally?
Well, there's all kinds, and you don't want to, you know, highlight the sob story per se, but really these are stories of perseverance. There was one student we had recently. She was a fifth grader, and she had a horrendous school year. First, her house burned down. She lost everything she had in a fire. Her family was essentially homeless for several weeks. They were staying with relatives while looking for a place. We were able to connect them with a nonprofit community development corporation in the area that had housing that was high quality housing, but at a rate that low income families could afford. Then after that, her mom died quite unexpectedly. She had gone in for a kind of routine outpatient procedure. Something happened and she died of complications shortly thereafter. And so you have a child dealing with a house burning down, mom's gone, aunt takes over to help raise her, aunt dies too. And this is all in the same school year. So her resilience was absolutely inspiring, incredible. And she's a Christian, which was so encouraging to me as well. But school became her sanctuary. It was the one place where she could go and kind of get away from all the problems of home, or at least be distracted. It was also a place when she did need help. We had a full-time therapist who could talk to her. And we had people, even just staff and administration, who loved and cared for her, go and sit in the office and talk. So those are the kinds of ways, I think, you know, that's just one small example of how public schools, these are public schools, can serve kids and really live the gospel, even if you can't preach and teach it in this environment verbally.
I think that makes a difference to hear about some of these specific stories. So it's not just this amorphous, you know, challenge or issue that people talk about. But what about your experience in public school with other Christians that you met in the field of education? What was that like?
It astounds me how many Christians are in public education. You know, teaching is one of these altruistic type of professions. You don't get into it for the money, that's for sure. And you don't get into it really for the prestige, the way modern culture views K through 12 education. So most of the people are getting into it really because they want to help and because they want to serve. And a lot of times those folks are Christians. Now, I'm in the South, so it may be a little different in other parts of the country, but even in interviews where you're really not supposed to talk about religion, politics, anything like that, people would volunteer, I go to this church, or I believe in God, and this is why I do it. And in the last school I worked at, 10 out of 11 teachers were avowed Christians, and the 11th one may have been, but she just never verbalized it. And so that was without any, you know, planning or anything like that. That's just who the profession attracted. And so it was extremely encouraging to be around other believers in this mission who saw a bigger purpose than just really relieving material needs or filling with knowledge about the world, but were driven by a bigger mission and a bigger purpose that came from their faith. So public education is Christian in a lot of ways, because the people who are serving there, not all of them, but a very large number, in my experience, are believers.
Now, I know you said you couldn't explicitly, obviously, preach or teach the gospel, but with all these different Christians that are in public education, how did you and these other Christians, in your experience, really be able to enrich the lives of the children that you were teaching, especially like, for example, the one that you explained to us, you know, her situation with all the deaths in her family? I'm sure there were other students who had similarly hard situations. So how did you guys do that without being explicit, like, okay, here's the gospel?
Well, a lot of times, you know, it was sort of moral support for one another. There was another teacher who used to recite the same psalm every time she came into work. And even just sharing how we as believers kind of got through each day, because these are long, hard, tough days, especially when you're in low-income schools where the job is much bigger than teaching, you know, specific content, really paying attention to the whole child in a lot of ways. And it's taxing. And so a lot of times we would just be moral support for one another. We could say we're praying for one another, and this isn't around students or violating any laws or anything, but you just share support. And that was a major, major way to maintain joy in the profession. Beyond that, a lot of our kids were already Christian, and so we might be going to church with them. A lot of their parents were Christian, and if they brought up the conversation, you know, we could talk about it. And so, again, being in the South, it may be a little different than other areas, but faith is still present in America, and it's still present in the students who are walking through the doors, the parents who are sending the kids there. But beyond that, we just tried to model it, and it really forces you as a believer to think about how can you be salt and light in an environment where you can't say Jesus Christ is the reason why I'm doing this. And so I think we would kind of do our best to model a positive attitude at all times, and these are things that all teachers should do, but the motivation is different when it's because of the gospel. And there would be occasional moments when students ask you about your faith or what you believe, but then you can speak honestly, and then they know, okay, I know this teacher's like that because she has a belief in someone bigger, a creator who loves all of us, and this is why he or she is doing it.
I know you said that teaching doesn't necessarily like 9 to 5, there's so much more to it, but how has being a teacher in the past in the public schools impacted your life?
I think that aside from marriage and becoming a Christian, teaching has been probably the most formative experience. For one, it put me in sustained contact with people in poverty. And it's so easy as middle class or above not to have any meaningful interaction with people of a lower income class. I mean, beyond maybe the cashier at a store you go to, but to do life with folks, to go to the same churches, to go to the same sporting events, to have conversations with them, to sit down and talk with parents of students and hear where they're coming from, hearing their perspectives on their own communities. A lot of times we look at poor communities and we see nothing but problems, but to listen to somebody who lives there and to see the beauty and the joy that they see gives you a different appreciation for the place. So that was transformative for me, to understand that poverty is a problem, but the people in poverty aren't the problem. They're human beings made in the image of God whom we need to love and respect, and you can't do that unless you know them. So that helped me there. It also exposed me to how deep the racial problems in the United States are. You know, a lot of folks basically think that the hard work is over and that it was accomplished at the end of the 20th century civil rights movement. Once we passed, you know, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Fair Housing Act, we're good. And now everyone just needs to be nice to each other. Well, yeah, those things are good, but at the same time, there's so much more work to be done. There are systemic issues. Again, I think one of the things that we need to be looking very carefully at is housing and zoning. And why should a person's zip code determine the quality of their education? And what can we do about that from a structural level? And it plays out along racial lines, unfortunately, most of the time. It also exposed me to the real need, and this is where Christians can get involved, to be culturally aware and culturally responsive. So a lot of times teachers going into low-income schools, which are populated by minorities, are themselves white and don't know much about cross-cultural interaction. I think we need to think of ourselves as missionaries, learn as much as we can about the culture and the community, and go in and do no harm, especially when it comes to cultural and racial assumptions. So those are some of the things that teaching exposed me to.
So what advice would you give to somebody who wants to be a teacher, you know, a Christian out there who says, well, yeah, I'm willing to be a Christian and teach in a public school environment, but they are hesitant for some of the reasons that you mentioned. What would counsel would you give them?
I would say teaching is a calling. And if you have an internal conviction that's been confirmed by people close to you and who know you, go for it. Listen, God will take care of you. If he has called you to that work, it does not mean it will be easy. In fact, I can guarantee you it will be extremely difficult, perhaps the hardest challenge you've ever faced professionally in your life, especially your first few years. But you're not going into it for the job to be easy. You're not even going into it to have a good time. You're going into it to serve. And I think that mentality is important because the days are going to be hard and there are going to be times you want to quit. But you got to remember that this is a calling, this is a vocation, and that you are there not for yourself but for others. Concerns about being a Christian in a secular environment, well, you step out of your door every morning and that's where you are. And for this, a lot of people are dealing with this already. In the corporate atmosphere, in the political atmosphere, you name it. So it's not a unique challenge to public education. That being said, if someone's concerned about that and their faith and, you know, what are the boundaries and restrictions, God will take care of you. You go into it with the right motivation. You go into it prayerfully and with a servant's heart. He's going to open up opportunities for you to be a witness, whether or not you can verbalize that in the workplace or not. And you'll be amazed at the opportunities that you have to share the reason for the hope that you have. But you'll never understand or you'll never be exposed to those opportunities unless you get into it.
So what about for the rest of us? I like the example you gave about pro-life and advocating for the unborn. I don't know that I'd ever applied that to other matters of social justice. And so what are some practical ways for the body of Christ to advocate for children in public schools in kind of a similar way, to have that kind of same conviction? Like, you're right, I don't think abortion has ever impacted my family or myself personally, but I am, you know, staunchly pro-life. So how do we take some of those convictions and apply that to other issues of social justice?
Great question. And I emphasize the right mindset is critical. Do we really buy that this is an issue of justice? And if not, I would just advise people go onto any online Bible tool, and they usually have, you know, word searches on there. Type in the word justice, type in the word poor, and see what comes up, and try to look at those passages through the lens of public education. We need to first start with a biblical scriptural foundation for why we do what we do. And I think the evidence is ample there. But getting down to the practical, you want to talk about real difficult choices that might make an impact. Where do we choose to live and why? Because that's going to have drastic effects on your options for public education. Many evangelical Christians who are middle class and above, you have choices. You can choose this school district or that school district. You can pick a house based on the schools that you want your children to go to. The poor don't have as many options. And so in solidarity, would you choose to live in a neighborhood like that and invest in the school there because you don't have another choice? That's a real different level of commitment, right, than reading the Bible on your own or a book on your own. But those are the kinds of things that are going to have to happen. Obviously, churches, you don't have to affirm everything that public education affirms to support the teachers there and the kids there. I wonder what it would be like to have sort of an affinity group of public educators through the church. So I'm sure in every congregation, you have teachers, you have staff members, you have administrators who work in public schools. Just facilitating those folks getting together can be an immense source of encouragement and can also be a catalyst for lots of different ideas. And so this is very contextual. It's hard to give blanket recommendations because, you know, the Mississippi Delta is going to be different from New Jersey. It's going to be different from the Bay Area in terms of public education. But if you get folks together in those contexts, they'll come up with some amazing solutions. And never underestimate the power of personal relationships. Right now, I'm going to graduate school, but it's quite a distance away from where I actually live. And so a couple from a local church where I go to school, they've opened up their house for me to stay a couple nights a week, so I don't have to make that commute every single day. Stuff like that makes a difference, and we don't need to overlook that. We don't need to think that we have to change the entire national or district education system to make a positive difference for kids or for the people who work there.
Yes, I think that's a very good word. I know that our church I mentioned earlier is partnered with a local public school. And one thing that we have done that's really practical is that, I mean, there are people mentoring students, but that takes a time commitment. But one thing we've done in the summer is to, their principal gives us a reading list that they have, and most of those kids can't purchase books, and our church purchases tons of books for them that they can use for their reading programs in the summer. And to me, that's something practical that you can do, and just starting something small that way. And I agree with you, partnering with a local public school is really helpful, and I think that's been encouraging in our community. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Jamar. So, Jamar, fried chicken or barbecue ribs?
Ooh, that's tough. Barbecue ribs.
Okay, Christmas is coming up, so what's something on your Christmas gift wish list?
Oh, like 2 straight days to sleep in, watch Netflix, do nothing.
And I know you live in Mississippi, so what's one of your favorite things about living in Mississippi?
So many things. I just put up a Facebook post related to your first question, is that some of the best barbecue in Mississippi is in gas station convenience stores. They set up the smoker outside, and they bring those ribs or the chicken or whatever right into the gas station, and great barbecue in Mississippi is oftentimes no further than the next place you need to fill up.
That's great. And what book are you reading right now, besides the Bible?
Yeah, well, in graduate school, I've read about 40 books this semester. But the most recent one I read was called A Nation of Neighborhoods, and it was sort of an American studies approach by a guy named Benjamin Looker, an American studies approach to neighborhoods both as a place and as a concept in culture. And chapters 5 and 6 in that book talk about the inner city and how the slum and the ghetto become one and the same. So that there was a period you could talk about the ghetto and it didn't mean lower income and it didn't mean black. But over the time, especially in the last half of the 20th century, those two terms get equated. And so now when you say ghetto or inner city or slum, you automatically think black or minority and poor. So that was just some intriguing connections that he was able to make.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. Well, thanks, Jamar, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the questions and the opportunity to write for the Christian Research Journal.
Jamar has written our Viewpoint article called Christians in Public Education, A Matter of Biblical Justice, in the forthcoming Volume 39, Number 6 issue of the Christian Research Journal. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Jamar has also written a feature article on race for the journal called Putting Race in Biblical Perspective, which is available free online at equip.org. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you go to equip.org, where you can download our free smartphone app on which you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live, listen to previous broadcasts, make a donation, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. The holidays are coming up, so please consider giving gift subscriptions to the Christian Research Journal at equip.org. So until our next author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.